Hello, this is Listen Up, a podcast by Stand Up for Kids Orange County. And today we are joined by another one of our newest advisory board members, Dr. Natasha Nadari. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
To get us started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. So I am a psychiatrist. I work for the Orange County Healthcare Agency. I did my training all different places in the country. I actually went to undergrad right here at Claremont McKenna. I did my medical school in Chicago and then trained at Duke University in North Carolina for a while and then came out here with my family. I am married to another psychiatrist and I have a 6-year-old daughter.
Awesome. Wonderful. And what initially drew you to our nonprofit mission?
Ever since being engaged with medicine, I've been interested in working with underserved and homeless communities, done several sort of projects through my work. When my daughter turned, I think it was 2, my husband and I didn't want her to get gifts because we have a lot of stuff. And so we were looking for actually a charity to recommend donations to, and I wanted something that worked with homeless kids. So that's actually how we found Stand Up for Kids. So my
Oh,
daughter's
okay.
second birthday was donations to Stand Up for Kids to protect us from lots of plastic toys.
Yes.
And then, we went to the gala and we met more people. And I actually had known Dr. Kumar from, we both worked at Kaiser together before I left for the county. So, yeah, so then we just kind of got more and more involved.
That's super cool. That's a very interesting way to get involved in that. Hey, we need to donate these toys. Where can we get them to? And before joining the board, were you familiar with Stand Up for Kids, other than the donation aspect of it?
Yeah, I mean, familiar. I didn't volunteer at all, so I haven't like worked with the kids and things like that, but I was familiar, of course, with like the mission and just having worked with the homeless community more through my job, just familiar with some of the aspects of like navigation and the challenges there, but no specific kind of volunteer work from me prior to joining the board.
Right. And in relation to the background that you had from your job and dealing with homelessness, can you talk a little bit about that?
Several kind of points in my career, I interacted with homeless individuals who were patients. So, when I was back in North Carolina, we had done a program that had targeted like high utilizers of emergency services. So, a lot of them had psychosocial issues, including homelessness or unstable housing, things like that. And then when I first moved here, I worked for Kaiser. And we had some interaction with homeless population, not as much as I do at my current job, but I worked in Santa Ana. And one thing that sort of drove me to change jobs to a job where I had more contact with the homeless population was that a lot of individuals lived in the parking lot of my clinic. And when I left, I told my boss, I come here every day and I'm like, this is such a shame. Someone should do something. I mean, it's tragic. And then I'm like, well, wait a second. I'm a psychiatrist. Maybe I could do something. And so I kind of transitioned to working with more homeless population. And now at my current job, a large percentage of my clients are currently homeless. We serve patients with severe persistent mental illness. So a lot of them struggle with addiction, are living either in shelters or on the street. So yeah, that's kind of my experience in that
Okay.
area.
And as a medical professional in this field, what can you relate from psychiatric conditions to the cycle of homelessness?
Yeah. Oh gosh.
I know it's a big
How long
question,
is this podcast?
yeah.
So yeah, I think a couple things sort of stick out to me. I mean, I'm a big believer in like a housing first model, right? So it's very hard to be psychiatrically well when you are living in a tent. I mean, I think that's just common sense. It makes sense. But you see it, of course, right? When we get people housed, they just tend to be able to take their medications and stay sober and do all the other things that we all do for our mental health, right? Like spend time with friends and exercise and like just little things that obviously would be really difficult when you're just trying to find a place to stay for the night and things like that. So that's one kind of obvious relationship. I think I also see a lot of individuals who have struggle with like generational poverty, so where they grew up homeless, they have a lot of trauma-related symptoms, or with the trauma of homelessness. And it's hard for them to make the plans to get out of homelessness without a lot of support, right? So one thing I notice is I always say for myself, right? If I was on the verge of living in my car, I would be like, well, this is a disaster. Yeah. Like, I need to figure this out. I need to get help. What am I going to do? And for, you know, a lot of my patients, it kind of doesn't quite strike them like that,
right?
Because they grew up in that situation. So they're like, well, this is just something that happens. Sometimes people are on the street, sometimes people are in their cars, and sometimes it's challenging to support them in finding a path to, you know, housing and wellness.
To you and me, it is a detrimental thing if we were on the verge of homelessness. Right. To them, it just seems, because they've experienced it, just not as a big of a deal to them.
Right.
Which is, it just continuing the cycle of it, because they don't feel the need to immediately do something about it.
Their alarm bells are not like blaring, right? They're just sort of like, oh, this isn't great.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'll call someone and see if I can figure something out. And they struggle a lot before they come to us, you know, is that I think a lot of people don't realize that they're in a situation that's really pretty critical. And a lot of people would see as a crisis, and we have a lot of supports to help them.
As far as our mission goes, especially when it comes to kids and youth, stemming that at that point, I feel is most critical. How do you feel about that? About stemming it from an early age?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that once you have experienced homelessness for a good portion of your life, it is much harder to get stable in housing, right? It feels so uncomfortable. And just, it can be a lot of work, and you've gone through a lot. But yeah, absolutely. I think being able to support, you know, teens and young adults in breaking that cycle of really generational poverty and generational homelessness is critical. I think it's the time when people are able to best adapt, of course.
Right. And how do you envision translating your passion for our cause into tangible contributions as a board member?
Good question. So it actually is interesting. I feel like there is a lot of, when I've gone to the board meetings so far, there's a lot of skills on the board that I think are really helpful. Just among the different, like, diverse skills, right? I was kind of surprised, or just pleasantly surprised, with like all the diversity of different skills that people were bringing to the table. Mm-hmm. So there seems to be a lot of skills, I think, in fundraising, in event planning, in philanthropy, all those areas. And so I think for me, obviously, like, my mental health expertise and also being involved in the county. So I'm familiar with kind of some of the navigation and things like that. I think one of the things that Stand Up For Kids seems to be working towards or going towards now is really knowing how to connect the youth with mental health services. And so that's an area where I definitely see a role for myself to help educate, like, the case managers and just provide that kind of support in what the mental health system looks like and how it can overlap with the housing navigation that they're already doing, right? Because the housing navigation is so essential in the mentoring, and, you know, the mental health piece can be really important too. So I think obviously working them both together is really important. I also think, you know, I don't want anyone to feel like they have to reinvent the wheel, because I actually think Orange County does have a lot of really good services for mental health. Of course, we are always impacted. We are always overrun, not understaffed. I mean, that's all mental health, unfortunately. Yeah. But there are a lot of services in place. And I think just having a knowledge of those services can be really helpful for the case managers and for all the stand-up staff. So that's where an area that I think I can really contribute.
That's a very interesting point, that you can guide people into the psychiatric care aspect of, because it's an important aspect of homelessness too.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you share any experiences that you've had in networking and cultivating relationships that might help our nonprofit?
I think that there are lots of people, obviously, that I interact with who are interested. Some kind of groups of people that I think I plan to maybe network with more are the parents of the children in this area.
Yeah.
So definitely there's a community of parents around here. And I think it is very easy to live your life as a parent of a young child and be very insulated because it's a hard time and, you know, you got a lot going on. And so just sort of talking to people about how we can, you know, improve our community, right? Because I think a lot of people have concerns about things like safety and stability and things that I think overlap with the housing crisis.
Yeah.
And so although obviously I don't want to underemphasize like how people just have a right to housing, right? And so it doesn't matter if it's, you know, because of you feeling unsafe or mm-hmm. things like that. Those aren't the most essential things, but, you know, something that's a win-win, right? Where our community is nicer, people are better off, people are housed, people are not sleeping on the street, then those people get the resources they need as well. And I think parents also are open to the idea that children should not be living in cars, living in tents, right. living on the street, things like that. So that's one area. And then obviously like my coworkers.
Yeah.
So I've already gotten, you know, a lot of advice from people that I've worked with as far as like, oh, what's some information that you think would be helpful mm-hmm. for our case managers and housing navigation? And, you know, so I think there's potential for there to be some two-way relationship, even if it's not formal, but at least like sharing advice back and forth and things like that, because everyone in my job knows that if we can get people housed, they're going to do better.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the public perception of mental illness and homelessness as it relates to your position as a medical professional?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm trying not to say anything like too harsh.
No.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of criticism to go around for the kind of perception of homelessness, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I think a lot of people are unhoused because of the completely insurmountable prices that it costs to live here.
Right.
And of course, we have our people that have severe persistent mental illness and are on the street. I think those people tend to be very visible at times. Like there are as a select group of people who are very visibly homeless and then very visibly mentally ill.
Right.
And so I do think that sometimes is the face of homelessness. So when they talk about building homeless communities or building low-income housing or trying to get people off the streets into housing, right, then people in nice neighborhoods mm-hmm. are like, oh no, we don't want a bunch of people with mental illness like living down the street from our children's school.
It's the not in my backyard
yeah,
mentality.
The NIMBY, yeah, exactly. I'm trying not to like, once again, be too harsh. And I can understand it, of course. You definitely want your children to be safe, but it is definitely a misconception of both mental illness yeah. and of homelessness, right? So the vast majority of people who are homeless have mental health symptoms that are secondary to homelessness, not mental health symptoms causing
right.
their homelessness. And at the same time, there is a definite population of people who need some real supports to stay housed because of their mental health symptoms. And I don't know, I don't think any of those people are really posing a threat to us.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there's a lot of work to be done with the public perception. And I don't know how to do that. I think just, you know, the more people interact with mm-hmm. the homeless community, the more that they experience them as humans. Yeah, I wish I had a good answer. Maybe you guys.
That we could, that it is hard to change the perception because it's a very ingrained perception in society a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it's hard to think about things like, oh, geez, I'd really like people to be housed.
Yeah.
But then like, that looks a certain way, right? There's things that need to be done mm-hmm. and it costs money and it takes space and they will be housed in someone's neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so being willing to really think of all children as equally valuable.
Yeah.
And I think seems like it should be easy, but take some work, take some cognitive work for us to think about things like that.
Yeah. You think it would be an easy solution is like put people in houses, but then you get into the nuts and bolts of the situation
mm-hmm.
and it's not as simple as
yeah.
that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what do you, as far as a board member, what do you view for the future of our organization, your role in the future of our organization, or what's your vision for it?
Yeah. I mean, I think some of the things I talked about, so kind of like a more robust, hopefully two-way relationship with sort of different mental health communities. And yeah, I mean, as far as I know, you know, from what I know of Stand Up for Kids, and obviously I'll learn more and more as I am, you know, engage more and more, but it seems like it's going very well. Like
yeah.
I feel like more of what, you know, what we're already doing Just bigger and being able to target more people. I mean, I think if that is what the future looks like, I think that would be great, right? Yeah. Just getting more resources out there. And I definitely do want the case managers and the youth to feel like they have good access to the supports and mental health care that they need. You know, obviously our state and our community needs to put a lot of resources into housing. And so hopefully that is going to be in the works and we'll be able to, you know, have the infrastructure in place to really get the youth into that housing or take advantage of anything that's coming down the pipe.
Right. And you talked about when you were at Kaiser, how you did not have as much of as many interactions with homeless people as you did in your current job. Is there any experience, is there any like specific experience that happened while you were there that made you want to transition to be working with more homelessness?
Yeah. So actually, I guess I would see my job at Kaiser, and I don't want to like, you know, say anything negative about Kaiser, but as a step back from what I actually did want to do. So I think I was always interested in working in more like underserved communities and people with more severe persistent mental illness than we were seeing at Kaiser. And so it wasn't necessarily that anything specific happened to make me want to transition except for like the constant knowledge of what was going on, the housing crisis getting worse and kind of wanting to do something about it. Also, like my child got older. And so it kind of freed up some bandwidth for me to sort of pursue something that I was more like passionate about, but maybe would take more emotional energy.
Has that been always something you were passionate about even before you went to medical school?
So, I mean, I don't want to say no, but probably no is the answer. I do think that, I guess I've always wanted to do something sort of meaningful, and I think medical school feels like a path there. But I think earlier on, I kind of felt like, well, there's lots of people that need help, and there's lots of people that need medical care, and I still think that that is very true. But when I was in medical school, so I was in Chicago, so I trained at Cook County, which is the hospital from ER. It's a safety net hospital in Chicago. It has a very large kind of, you know, homeless population, and then just it's just safety net. So it's like lots of people who are otherwise, you know, would fall through the cracks. And I loved that. I mean, I just thought it was, I thought it was a really good use of my skills, honestly. Like, I feel like I have some skills to interact with people who are different than me. And then also, I don't want to slip into like interviewing for residency mode here, but but yeah, so kind of a good use of my skills. But also, I just felt it, found it really rewarding. And I mean, it seems obvious that like working with a higher needs population would be more rewarding, but I think everyone, you know, there's lots of need out there, and I think everyone kind of finds a different niche. And for me, I just really feel like I can bring something to people who have a lot of needs. So
yeah, that's a really good answer, that you didn't know exactly what you wanted to do as far as helping people, but you always knew, and it's like, I want to help people, I just don't know how or what, or like what can I do to do it. And then you find it, and I feel like that's the truth for a lot of people. And is there anything else you'd like to share with us about your background or yourself or your goals for your time with our organization?
No, I mean, I think that, all the questions were really good. I think I said most of what I wanted to say. I guess one of my, the other thing I was going to say just in response to like the last question that you asked is just, I do feel like as I went through training and I got to know more people as like people, it kind of made it so clear that that just getting to know people and like knowing who they were, I'm not sure, I guess it's not that clear because I'm not articulating it very well, but that everyone's individual, which once again is really obvious, but you know, that you can't just clump people as, oh, there's these high needs people, there's people with mental illness, there's these homeless people. Like, everyone is a specific person, and a lot of those people are very like lovely and charming and have a lot of real strength and do benefit greatly from just having some support and having some treatment and having people recognize their strengths and say, hey, you know, this makes a lot of sense from where you've come from. Like, how can we build that into something, you know, beneficial for your future? And I think that I see that in my job. And I think that is a big part of the Stand Up For Kids mission that I really is appealing to me, like that piece of like recognizing the strengths they have and then building on them.
Right. Yeah. And just as one final question, and I know this is probably an impossible question to answer, but as far as changing the public's perception of it, like how, what would you say to somebody who is maybe less receptive to the idea of not homeless people in general, but as when we say, oh, we want to take these people off the streets, we want to get them mental health care. And they say, well, they're on the streets because of their own choices.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's a good question.
I know it's an impossible question.
It's, I guess there's like a difference between like what I think and what I would say.
Right.
Right. So I guess what I think is, you know, we didn't do, even if we believe that people are unhoused because of their choices, mm-hmm. which obviously I'm not,
it's
gonna,
not always,
yeah, we're not going to concede that, right? Like, I mean, people are unhoused because of a very clear system gives some people much less opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I would say, you know, read The Color of Law, like read some books about like how our society, you know, has created the situation. And then, so there's that piece, I think, where like we all, many of us, especially those of us who end up in kind of, you know, elite careers and things like that, like very much would like to believe in meritocracy. Mm-hmm. But when you look at like our actual society, right, it's just really hard to find.
Yeah.
And so some introspection, but also acknowledging that that introspection is pretty painful, right? Mm-hmm. Because I feel that I have worked very hard for where I am now.
Right.
And saying that other people haven't had the opportunity to get where I am doesn't mean that I don't, you know, that I didn't work hard to get here.
Yes.
It's just that I don't necessarily deserve it more than other people that didn't get the opportunity. So I think that's kind of one piece of it. And then the other piece, I think, that is, like I was saying, even if you believe that it's kind of like, it's not there but for the grace of God go I, but it's much more like, oh, those people are lacking some decision-making capacity, right? Like, I honestly believe, like, you didn't do anything to learn your decision-making, to earn your decision-making capacity, right? Like, or your good brain that works really well and can make plans and can make decisions and things like that. Like, other people have different strengths. So the fact that you're able to plan and make decisions without support, you didn't do anything to earn that. That doesn't make you better than people who struggle at that. And, you know, the fact that maybe you have not been exposed to substances or you don't have a predisposition for addiction, you know, none of those things make you a better person, right? None of those things are fundamental. Those are all parts of your biology and your upbringing and all that. And people just have different biology and different experiences. So the fact that someone, even if we say that someone struggles to make good decisions and that's why they're on the street, like, so? Like, does that mean they don't deserve help, that they don't deserve to be housed, you know, they don't deserve to be safe? And so, yeah, I guess that would be my very long-winded answer. I think whoever asked the question would probably be gone by now.
No, that's a good, that's where I was almost going with that, was that they believe that it somehow diminishes their accomplishments to say that, oh, well, this person's only in this position because of circumstance. It's like, well, that means I'm only in this position because of circumstance. And it's never as black and white as that, obviously.
Right.
It's very more nuanced than that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, just acknowledging that, like, people have worked very hard to get where they are and that, like, we're not taking anything away from you and we're not giving people your $1 million house and your Tesla. Like, we're just giving people like enough to meet their basic needs. So maybe we could all get behind that. Like, no one's taking your, you know, no one's taking your Rivian. You'll be okay.
And they'd be better off. We'd all be better off if everybody was housed.
Exactly. Right. Like, I was reading this book and it might have been Winners Take All. And it was,
I've heard of that book.
Yeah. It's very good. Everyone I think who's involved in charity should read it. But, he was talking about how, like, you know, if you drive a $500,000 car on crappy roads, you're going to have a bad experience. And so if we, you know, if our society is crumbling, but you have nice things, like your life is going to be worse, yeah. right? It is better for you if everyone is doing better.
Yeah.
Right. Regardless of just whether you have the belief that everyone kind of deserves
exactly,
to have their
basic needs met. And that's so going, that's kind of going into the argument from a different perspective as opposed to, which is, you know, weird because it should be, you know, they're human, they deserve housing. That should be the end of the argument.
But right.
Obviously no. that's not the case in all scenarios.
Yes. And I mean, I think in few, like yeah. I do think even people who are best intentioned and probably buy into that, like we said, when you get down to the nuts and bolts, mm-hmm. it is hard for people to really say, and I will give up this.
Exactly.
So yeah. someone else can have this. And that's, you know, human nature, it is hard.
Well, Dr. Mandari, thanks so much for talking to us. Your yeah. insights are so valuable in your profession, and I'm sure you will bring your wealth of knowledge to our organization, and it will benefit us greatly. So thank you so much for talking to
yeah,
us today.
Thank you so much. It was great.
Of Very course. Fun. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Listen Up, the Stand Up for Kids podcast. A big thank you to Marvin Andrade for their production and editing support. Find us on YouTube, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, and wherever you get your podcast if you'd like to support Stand Up for Kids. Please share this podcast with family, friends, and colleagues. Also check out our website at standupforkids.org/Orange County, or you can email me directly at garrettb@standupforkids.org to learn more. Please also consider a donation to help getting kids off the streets. 92 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly towards supporting youth in our community. On behalf of everyone at Stand Up for Kids Orange County, thanks for listening and have a great day.